Boker Tov, good morning to you in Toronto and other areas of the United States. And Tzoraim Tovim, good afternoon from Yerushalayim. Indeed, Tshuvah, Tfilah, and Tzedakah, the three parts that we talked about already last week and the week before, those three ingredients, component parts that will allow that should, unfortunately, we have a bad, evil decree against us, Kadosh Baruch Hu, God will notice, take great note to Tshuva, Tfilah, and Tzedakah. Ma'avirin et roa ha'gzerah, will eradicate, at least tone down the seriousness, the sting of a particular evil decree. So hopefully we exited Yom Kippur just yesterday, last night, with good tidings for the coming year. For each and every one of you, for your families and for your communities and surroundings, for Eretz Yisrael and for the entire world. Tzedakah is not necessarily a topic for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, although, as we pointed out in last week's shiur, the Rambam suggested upgrading in the area of Tefillah and Tzedakah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But today we are Motzei Yom Kippur, and certainly the topic is extremely important as we enter into a Yom Tov, into a Chag, as Chag HaSukkot. Much of the Shalosh Regalim experience, as represented in the Torah in Parshat Re'eh, speaks of an experience that takes others into consideration. Our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik elaborated on this point in his very, very famous speech, Kol Dodi Dofek, which was basically a speech that he delivered on Yom HaTzmaut, Israel Independence Day, back in 1956 at Yeshiva University. It became a manifesto for religious Zionism, translated originally by the Rav himself into Hebrew and subsequently into English and other languages. And there the Rav introduces this whole speech by discussing the topic of Eov and the question of suffering. And the Rav points out that at the beginning of the book of Eov, we see that indeed he's Ishtam Yireh Elokim Sur Meira. He's really a terrific person. He's God-fearing. One catch. He's very, very, very into protecting his own family, dealing with his own family. Somehow the outside world is cut off. When we see Eov at the end of the book, we discover it's an improved version of this individual, and it's someone who's already taken into consideration people from the outside. When one considers the halachot of Yom Tov, Rambam teaches us, and it's not on the available source sheet, but it's in Hilchot Yom Tov, the sixth chapter, Perek Vav. The Rambam speaks of that one must attend to the needs of others, especially the unfortunate who do not have provisions for Yom Tov. And Rambam emphasizes that if all we take care of is our own family and the immediate needs of the family, Ein zu simchat mitzvah, ela simchat kereso. This is not a simcha of a mitzvah, this is gastronomical simcha, and that's not at all what the Torah was speaking of. The Torah speaks of lager le'yatom v'la almana. You must take care of the widows, the orphans, the stranger, basically the destitute, the unfortunate, those who would not naturally have people to cater to their needs for Yom Tov. And we should never allow a situation to take place on Yom Tov where people are just left out in the cold. And therefore, the mitzvah of tzedakah takes on special meaning for Yom Tov. And the Rambam reiterates this, by the way, at the end of Hilchot Megillah. It's in the second chapter of Hilchot Megillah, where he speaks about the various mitzvot of Purim, including, of course, the reading of the Megillah, and the Mishloach Manot, and the Sudat Purim, the Purim Suda, and Matanot Levyonim, giving special gifts to those who are needy. And the Rambam there says, in the end of the second chapter of Hilchot Megillah, that there is no greater mitzvah in all, of all the mitzvot of Purim than Matnot Aniyim. He restates the theme that he developed in the Hilchot Yom Tov source of the sixth chapter. So today we're going to deal with some very, very primary issues of the mitzvah of tzedakah, and hopefully we will upgrade in our own lives our own not only understanding but also our own performance. I will try to somehow integrate some very, very interesting anecdotes, some rather personal, that I had with our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik on the issue of tzedakah. But let's get started with the source sheet. In the first source from Dvarim Perek Yud, the Torah tells us, Ki Hashem Elokechem, Hu Elokei HaElokim, Va'adonei HaAdonim, Hakem HaGadol HaGibor VaHanora, Asher Lo Yisa Panim VeLo Yikach Shochad. Moshe Rabbeinu is describing something about the grandeur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, you see the phraseology that was lifted from this pasuk and incorporated into the very, very fabric of the first bracha of Shmon Esrei, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, VaHanora. But we're going to focus on the very, very last three words. V'lo yikach shochad. God does not accept a bribe. Now, do we need Moshe Rabbeinu to teach us that God does not accept a bribe? I mean, when you talk about judges, so in the issue of judges, there's no doubt that judges are susceptible as human beings to accept a bribe. So there, the Torah speaks often about judges who should not take a bribe. But regarding a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's almost folly and ridiculous to suggest that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't take a bribe. So in the second source, Ramban clarifies and elaborates. Uperusho b'shochad. What does it mean that God does not take a bribe? Sha'afilu chasid gamur. Someone who is absolutely perfect is an individual who, in the words of Chazal, the word chasid means the one who goes the extra mile beyond the call of duty. Lufnim mishurat adin. Person who really, really seriously is not just over the 50% mark of mitzvah, but he's way into the 90% mark of mitzvah. Afilu chasid gamur, sheyavor avera, but this individual may have committed a sin here and there, lo yikach mimenu mitzvah mimitzvotav v'shochad lechaper lo. Ramban says, one might think that such a top individual, an individual who HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sure, would be very, very proud to have on this world, and yet, here and there might be an avera. So why does not a Kadosh Baruch Hu simply cancel out that avera with a handful of mitzvot that this individual has, and he will receive no reward, no punishment, and then he would end up perfectly pure? Ramban says that does not happen, because that would be considered somewhat of shochad. Shochad shel mitzvah, using a mitzvah to try to bribe a Kadosh Baruch Hu out of retribution type of punishment. Avo ya'anishehu al chata'av v'igmolo kichol tovotav. Kadosh Baruch Hu will keep the record accurate. He will be punished for the avera. He will be rewarded for the mitzvah, for the good deeds. And there can be no cancellation. In modern Hebrew, we use the word kizuz, and sometimes it's used on a very practical level on the Knesset, when certain votes have to take place, and members of opposing parties happen to be abroad, so they make a deal called kizuz, and they just won't be there. And this is what the Ramban is speaking about, a type of mutual cancellation of a mitzvah and avera, and Ramban says this would be constitute shochad. But what we do see is that Kadosh Baruch Hu will not use a mitzvah to somehow influence Kadosh Baruch Hu's will to do or perform on your behalf. Yes, you can daven, you must daven, you must pray, but nevertheless, you cannot waive the fact that you've performed so many good deeds and so many mitzvot and use this as a type of leverage against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. However, there's one exception, and that exception happens to be the mitzvah of tzedakah. And this comes through in the third source, in Masechet Pesachim, Daf Chet, where the Gemara says the following, Ha'omer sela zu l'tzdaka, v'shvil shiyichye b'ni, o she'eye ben olam haba, harei ze tzadik gamur. Simply put, if a person has a son who's critically ill, or any member of the family for that matter, or anybody who you feel very close to and you're praying, davening for his or her welfare, or a person says, I'd like to donate to tzedakah. Sela is a coin in the days of Chazal. If you donate a dollar, you donate a shekel, you donate a European euro, whatever it may be, for tzedakah, you pledge a donation so that, this is almost on condition, that your son should live, so that you should be guaranteed a section of Olam Haba. The Gemara says, "Hareza tzaddik amur." You are considered a perfect tzaddik in this regard. That doesn't mean that if a person is an outright rasha and he makes a donation of a coin for tzedakah because someone of his family is ill, that all of a sudden he becomes a tzaddik amur. The phrase tzaddik amur in this respect means that you're not out of line. You're actually in line. It is permissible to use tzedakah as a type of leverage against the Kadosh Baruch Hu that you should be able to call upon and draw upon this mitzvah of tzedakah for the purpose of receiving something that you would like. The Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik pointed out that with regard to saying a mishaberach in at the time of Kriyat HaTorah for sick people, so the custom is that we do offer a donation, babush yitain, and some shuls, some bet knesset have it that the person specifies a sum of money, and sometimes they just simply say matana, a gift. But whatever it is, the point that the donation is included into the fabric of the mishaberach for someone sick is not a cheap way for the Beit Knesset to raise money. But this is very much linked to this particular Gemara, that when it comes to praying for someone who's sick, the mitzvah tzedakah can act as a type of catalyst to bring about that which is received. Robert Kelman has a comment here, as you can all see, the whole concept is strange. Why shouldn't mitzvot influence how God treats us? The point is that the fact that the person does mitzvot ultimately does impact on how Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to us. But that's not a card that we are to use in employing or bringing about that response from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. While in tefillah, you can daven, and you have to use self-improvement. Rav Shamshon of Paul Hirsch pointed out in his introduction to his siddur that the word lehit palel, which comes from the in the grammatical sense, is called the hit pael, which means the reflexive. So normally if a person washes himself, it's called lehit rachet. So a person dresses himself, it's lehit labesh, where the action is done and it refers back to yourself. So when you're a mit palel, you're not davening to yourself. But Rav Hirsch points out that the word lehit palel, the root is pe lamed lamed, which means pileil, which means judgment. The act of prayer is actually an act of self-judgment. And when we daven and we pray, we're actually examining ourselves to see if we're indeed worth it. And somehow, on that score, we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with his great compassion, allows us to receive what we're asking for. But we cannot come with a bundle of mitzvot and argue the case that because we did this mitzvah and we were very careful about another particular mitzvah, that we deserve something. That's exactly what the Ramban says, Lo Yikach Shochar, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will not accept this. However, when it comes to tzedakah, this is going to be permissible. As a matter of fact, I believe I have on the second page of the source sheet, here it is. It's on the first page. It's on the first page towards the bottom where it says Halacha Tevav. It says Gidolei Hachamim Hayu Notnim Pruta Le'ani Kodem Kol Tefillah V'Achar Kach Mitpalalim. That there was a minhag, there was a custom of great Talmidei Chachamim to give a sum of money. Pruta is even a minuscule of money to a poor individual prior to one's davening. And this was done as a gesture of showing to those Baruch Hu that we are willing to take the first step. And the Torah speaks of the halakta b'drachav, going in the ways of God. And, you know, we know that the central pasuk of all of the psukei b'zimra that we say between Baruch Sha'amar and Yishtabach, so the central paragraph is Ashrei, the parak of Tehillim of Tehillah LeDavid, and the central pasuk is Poteach et Yadecha u'mazbia l'chol chai ratzon. That God is the one who opens his hands and provides sustenance to all, and by taking that first step, by showing the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we are actually also engaged in that kind of activity of showing the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we are prepared to help others, on that score we hope that the Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us and grant us as well. Some people have a custom to walk over to the tzedakah box and shul by Potech and Kotecha. Some have the custom to do it by Vavarach David, and some simply wait till the Gabbai comes around and shul after Kedusha. But whatever it is, there is this association of giving tzedakah at the time of tefillah because of this concept mentioned in the third source, Ha'omer Sela Zul Tzedakah Bishvil Sheyichye Bini. Now, it's very interesting that tzedakah, Chazal point out, is not just another one of the 613 commandments. There happen to be there's a group of seven commandments that are so central that Al Chachamim expressed the view that each of these mitzvot are comparable. The weight of these mitzvot can be compared to the entire Torah. Shkulim keneged shkulot keneged kol haTorah kula. They are equivalent to all of the other mitzvot, and one of them happens to be tzedakah. I'll just rattle off the others. Shabbat is one. The avera, the transgression of idolatry, avodah zarah, is one of them. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is one. Study Torah study. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, living in the land of Israel, is one. Brit Milah is another. And as I mentioned, now tzedakah. I think I just rattled off six. It'll come to mind in a moment. The seventh. Tzitzis. The Gemara says in Masechet Menachot of Mem Gimel, Mitzvah Tzitzit Shkula Keneged Kol HaTorah Kula. Yes, Tzitzis. Here you got all seven. But the Tzedakah is actually one of them. It's mentioned in the Gemara Masechet Bava Batra Davchet. I believe I even have it on the source page. It's on the source page number seven, source number seven on the second page. Towards the end of that source from Bava Batra Davchet, it reads Shkula Avaravasi Shkula Tzedakah Keneged Kol HaMitzvot. So we're dealing here with a very, very, very central mitzvah of assisting, of helping, and so on. Now there are different ways of helping an individual. It can be financial, but it does not necessarily have to be financial. Sometimes you help an individual by giving of your time. That's also considered tzedakah. We have a marvelous organization here in Yerushalayim. It's not Israel, but based in Yerushalayim. It's called Zichron Menachem. It's an organization that was started by a family who had a son whose name was Menachem, who had cancer and unfortunately passed away at a very young age. And the family decided to do something for other children who are in this predicament of terminal cancer. And one of the things they do is they provide Motzei Shabbat concerts of yeshiva boys coming over to either the hospital or to their homes and providing some music, which is very, very nice. And they get all kinds of yeshiva boys in Yerushalayim to volunteer their time. But one of the things that was necessary, and we got a call in remote for this kind of voluntary work, if someone had a car or a van, just to be the taxi driver for these fellows to help load up the equipment and drive them to wherever it is and then come and pick them back. And at that point, I happened to have had a little van, and I volunteered. I was very, very happy to do this. But I did not wear any rabbinic attire. I wore just a sweater and a slacks. And I remember these yeshiva boys would just view me as a taxi driver and say, Nahag, sa, you know, driver, move, you know, stop going. But this was a great mitzvah just to help this fellow out. And this was time. It was time on my part, and other people did this. That's also tzedakah. I mean, I know that in English the saying is time is money, but you can be of great assistance to people, not only with finances. On this score, I'd just like to bring to attention a note that, I'm sorry I don't have this on the source pages, but you can take note of this. I'm going to be quoting from the Rambam's Mishnah commentary to Masechet Pe'ah, first chapter, first Mishnah. It's a Mishnah I believe we all know fluently because it comes from Birkat HaShachar in the morning when we respond to Birkat HaTorah. Eilu dvarim she'en lahem shi'ur, ha'peyah, ha'bikurim, ha'rayon, gimunut chasadim, and gimunut chasadim, good deeds, certainly tzedakah factors into that equation. And it says, Eilu dvarim she'en lahem shi'ur, there's no limit of how much you can do. And the Rambam tells us that with regard to tzedakah, there actually is a limit, and the limit is 20%. The Gemara uses the phrase, Al yibazbez yoter michomesh. Don't give more than a fifth, 20% of your belongings for tzedakah. Chazal were concerned about the fact that perhaps at this great moment of generosity, you may be very, very forthcoming, but God forbid in a year or two or three, maybe things may have changed and your business goes sour and then all of a sudden you require the money and you're going to be in a situation without. So it's not a good idea to overdose in tzedakah. There's a 20% ceiling. There's a 10% requirement, ma'as tzedakah of him, but there's a 20% ceiling. And in the Mishnah commentary, the Rambam actually says that Eino chayav latet yoter mechamishit limono. You should not give more than a fifth of his money. Ele im asakein b'midat chasidut. If he does, then he's a super tzaddik. Chasidut here means lefnei mishurat adin. He's really, really doing well, and it is to be applauded. There's only one problem. The same Rambam in his major work in Mishnei Torah in Hilchot Arachim. Arachim Perichet, 8th chapter, Halacha Yud Gimel, it's the very, very end of Hilchot Arachim. The Rambam says very emphatically that that giving more than 20% Einzu Chasidut, this is not considered someone who's gone properly over the border, Elishtut, but it's nonsense. The Rambam basically says the ceiling is a ceiling, and you're not allowed to go over the 20% mark. And this seems to be a contradiction with his statement in the Perusha Mishnah commentary to Maseret Tehillah that was written several years earlier, that the Rambam seems to have indicated that if you go over the 20% mark, you do not only do you have a mitzvah, but it's very, very commendable. It's considered the chasidut. And there are various responses to this kind of contradiction or pseudo-contradiction. I actually saw something in the work of Rav Menachem Kasher, Zichronon Lebracha. Rav Menachem Kasher was the famous editor of the Torah Shlema. He wrote a book in 1947 entitled The Rambam and the Mechilta de Rashbi, Mechilta of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And just the moment of introduction, when we say Mechilta, which is one of the Midrashei Halakha, one of the Halakhic Midrashim on the Torah, we usually refer to the Midrash on Sefer Shemot, and it comes from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yishmael. We always knew of the existence of a parallel Mechilta in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Akiva, but because apparently it was not copied sufficiently, it simply got lost and never made it into the age of print. However, it was discovered, at least parts of it were discovered, in the late 1890s at the discovery of the Cairo Geniza, and the great famous Rosh Hashiva in the Hildesheimer Seminar of Berlin, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, published some of the work of the Mechilta of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the student of Rabbi Akiva. So it's known as Mechilta de Rashbi, but it's from the school of thought of Rabbi Akiva. And what Rav Menachem Kasher did in 1947, in his book Rambam Mechilta de Rashbi, he demonstrates that there are about 50 locations in the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam that we previously did not know the Rambam's source for a particular halakha, and lo and behold, it shows up in this Mechilta de Rashbi. In Rav Kasher's introduction to this book, he takes note of this particular contradiction that we just raised from Masechet Pe'ah in the Mishnah commentary to the Mishneh Torah Hilchot Arachim, and he suggests the following, that there are two different types of situations that require assistance. One is a life-threatening situation, and the other is simply easing the pain for someone. So Rav Kasher says that even in a life-threatening situation, your halachic obligation is to give up to 20%. You don't have to go totally broke and bankrupt in order to save someone's life. You don't have to do it. You must count on the fact that other Jews are going to join in the effort, and the maximum that you should be doing is up to 20%. However, if you go beyond the 20% and you feel that you have the means to save this person's life, perhaps you're dealing with a particular medical procedure that the insurance company is not going to cover, and if you don't do it at this moment, the person is not going to have this treatment, and you feel that you are going to finance and bankroll a particular medical procedure, Rambam says, you are a tzaddik. That is called chasidut. You've gone beyond the 20%, and for saving of life, you're permitted to do so. However, Rav Kasher points out that in the other source, in the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam is referring to the type of assistance that's not a life-threatening nature. A person needs help in some area. So in that type of assistance, the Rambam says, your ceiling is 20% of your financial weight, and beyond that, you should not give 1 cent or more. And the comment of Rabbi Kalman concerning the individual himself, yes, I would agree that that the Rambam would also would agree that a person to save his own life would have to give his last cent just to save his own life. I believe immediate family members would do this as well, and we do know and we do see that that people sometimes mortgage their own homes in order for to save an individual's life. I can just point out, I don't have the source in my head, but Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Yerlot Moshe has a responsum from an individual who asked a question about life insurance and whether having life insurance is a good idea or not a good idea. Is it something that speaks well of one's confidence in God, bitachon b'kadosh baruch hu, or perhaps it indicates that he has less confidence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And Rav Moshe Feinstein warmly recommends the individual to take out life insurance, and it's a very good thing, and even goes on to suggest to the individual how much life insurance or health insurance to take out. So that's just a piece of good advice, Eitzah Tova, that a person shouldn't be stuck, God forbid, with a situation that he becomes a financial burden on his family and friends and acquaintances. But okay, so the question, we're getting to this very, very good point from the Yisrael Tzedek, concerning, and if a person is really a billionaire and 90% of what he has just doesn't make a bit of a difference to him, the 10% still remains quite a millionaire. Here we're going to get to one of the great, great, great stories that I have from the Rav. We know the Rav as the towering Gadol Hador, the towering Talmud Chacham Lamdan, the towering person with oratorical ability and skill. I mean, the Rav doesn't need my introduction here. He speaks for himself. However, what most people do not know, and it's really coming out of the closet these days, the Rav happened to have been a tremendous Baal Tzedakah. Now, in order to be a philanthropic giant, you have to have some money in order to be in a category of a very, very big Baal Tzedakah. So those people who we know are great philanthropists, so we know them as very, very wealthy individuals, and thank God they have the wisdom to understand that they were granted, you know, this great gift of wealth, material wealth, and they see themselves as shlichim, messengers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to help others. Unfortunately, not all millionaires see this, but those who do, they do, and it's to be applauded without a doubt. Now, people who are Rashi Yeshiva, who were employed by Yeshiva University, usually didn't turn out to be very wealthy individuals, and certainly would not qualify as great philanthropists. The Yeshiva would require philanthropists in order that the Rashi Yeshiva would be able to receive their meager salaries. And we're not talking about great Baalei Tzedakah, that every time an individual came, where most people gave nickels and dimes, so the Rav would give a quarter or a dollar, which was the case anyway. But that's not what we're talking about. I have information from close acquaintances of the Rav from Boston that back in the early 1950s, there were two individuals in Boston who were particularly close and loyal to the Rav, who were comfortable, let's just say comfortable in the stock market dealings. And every individual has some type of savings in the bank, and they approached the Rav that perhaps they would play with his money a little bit on the market, and whatever happened, happened. And the Rav actually went along with this. And long story short, the Rav became a very, very, very wealthy individual. People did not know this, but what people also did not know is that the rumors that we were hearing at the yeshiva as students was that the Rav was giving over 60% of his earnings to tzedakah. Now, 60% of it was a phenomenal amount of money. I can tell you that the Rav's cousins in Yerushalayim, the Soloveitchiks, from the lineage of the Rav's uncle, Rav Yitzchak Zev, who was known as Rav Belbel Soloveitchik, his children, who were running the Brisk Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, who basically ostracized the Rav because of his connections to the Mizrahi and his affiliation with academic life, nevertheless, they didn't have any problems receiving thousands of dollars annually from the Rav's personal money to keep up the yeshiva in Brisk. And the Rav would support many, many local causes in Boston, including his own school, Maimonides School in Boston, and many, many causes in Eretz Yisrael. It was a phenomenal amount of money that the Rav was giving to various individuals and to institutions. And I once had the chutzpah to ask the Rav in private conversation that we as Talmidim were hearing that the Rav was giving about 60% of his earnings to tzedakah. How does that sit with the Rambam in Hilchot Arachin, who said that Al Yibazbez Yotem Michomesh, don't give more than 20%. Yelamdenu Rabbeinu, please Rabbi, teach us, it's Torah. And if these are rumors and if they're not true, please discount them and I'll publicize it. And if they're true, you know, perhaps an explanation would be in order because we would like to understand Halacha. And the Rav looked at me and he said, you obviously forgot a pasuk in Sefer Kohelet. Which pasuk did I forget? Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yecheta. No individual can go through life without at least one avira, one sin. And the Rav tells me, I wouldn't want to make Shlomo Melech into a liar. And he felt that he had to have at least one avira, at least one avira. Now, from that bit of humor, number one, I received confirmation that it was true. And two, that I believe the comment from Yisrael from Passaic is correct. The Rav felt that he would never be a burden, a financial burden on anyone, and therefore he felt that he could unload that those kind of sums of money, and he never feared that he would ever be in a situation that someone in his immediate family wouldn't take care of him. He had very, very, very few personal needs, and therefore he felt this would be okay. I received further confirmation about this practice of the Rav from one of the Rav's grandchildren, one of the children from my great Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein here in Yerushalayim, and I'm referring to Rav Meir Lichtenstein, and he told me it is absolutely true, and I can publicize it, that this was the conduct of the Rav with regard to tzedakah. And I, from my own personal experience, the subject of tzedakah came up in much of the private conversation with him, because when I started out in the rabbinate back in the United States in Long Island City, it's sometimes known as Astoria, New York City and Queens, so I went into the Rav for bracha. I was a whole 24 years old, and the Rav told me that when his grandfather, Rav Chaim from Brisk, gave a bracha to his son, who was the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, upon assuming the rabbinate in the town of Chasalovich in Belarusia. So Rav Chaim told his son, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, don't you ever forget that a rabbi is not exempt in two mitzvot. One is Torah study, and the second is giving tzedakah. Just those who are congregational rabbis know that many times being involved in so many communal activities, the last thing you have in mind is to open up a sefer and sit and learn. And that's why Rabbanim should be giving shiurim, because that forces them to open up a sefer and prepare a shiur. But second is, many times rabbis get up at the pulpit and demand from their congregants to open up their coffers and support all kinds of causes. And many times, Balabatam, the congregants are looking at the rabbi and how much is the rabbi giving. And people know how much the salary of the rabbi is. And sometimes it's disproportionate in terms of what the rabbi gives, usually on the lower side, than what he demands of people in his own congregation on a very similar salary level. And that can provide for a nice hefty chilul Hashem. The Rav said that the rabbi should be giving more than the average congregant in order to provide as an example. And he felt that this bracha that Rav Chaim gave to son Rav Moshe, the Rav felt that this bracha was appropriate to give me as well back in 1977. I had an incident back in 1976 that also somehow had to do with tzedakah, that I was engaged. So, you know, many times a chatan has one minhag, one custom in the family, and a kala has a different custom in the family. And the issue at hand happened to have been the waiting time between milk and meat, besari and chalavi. And the question is, normally the halacha is pretty clear that the wife goes over to the minhag of the chatan. Well, the question is, does the chatan have to upgrade a minhag? Because of various, without getting into the details, the issue was of 3 hours and 6 hours of Basar B'Chalav, and trying to understand if there was a need, for whatever reason, to take the three-hour view, which somehow emanated from the Western Europe, from Germany in the last 200 years, and go back to the six-hour view, which became popular after the days of the Rama in Eastern Europe. And the Rav said, no, there's no particular need to upgrade in a chumrah in this area, and somehow it was pushing a little bit, and maybe nevertheless we should go back. And the Rav said, look, if you're looking for a chumrah, I'll recommend two areas that chumrah is very, very, very vital. One is the Aveira of Lashon Hara, and the second is the Mitzvah of Tzedakah. So in those two areas, it's a very, very good idea to be machmer, and he specifically mentioned Tzedakah as being one of the cases. Now we're going to go back to the source sheet and take a look at the source number 4, which is really the meat of the Rambam, Hilchot Matnot Aniyim. Hilchot Matnot Aniyim, which is the halachot of providing for the poor, the destitute, the poverty stricken. This is found in the book of Zra'im of the Rambam. It's the seventh book of the Mishneh Torah. And we know that the Rambam introduces each book with a pasuk, a verse from either Tehillim or Mishlei, which provides somehow the theme and the spirit of the entire book. In the Sefer Zra'im, the Rambam uses a pasuk from Tehillim Perakuf Yutet, Tehei Yadcha Le'azreini. We ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu, David HaMelech writing, Tehei Yadcha Le'azreini, God should be to my assistance, to my help. And here, as the Rav's son-in-law, Rav Professor Yitzhak Tversky, who today is his yahrzeit, Yud Aleph Tishrei, a very, very special individual, Dr. Isidor Tversky, Zichron Levracha, in his monumental work, Introduction of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, Rav Tversky points out that the Rambam is playing on the words Ezer, which is Ayin Zayin Reish, help, and Zera, Zayin Reish Ayin, simply mixing up the letters. And he's using this pasuk for the book of Zra'im. The book of Zra'im is basically the book that the Rambam will deal with the agricultural mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael, whether it's a truma and maaser and shemitah. And if you think about the root of all of the mitzvot of the field, many of them have to do with giving. Truma clearly is giving to the Kohen, and Maaser Rishon is giving to the Levi, and there's Maaser Ani in the third and seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, giving to poor people. And then you have Leket, Shikha, and Peya, the three mitzvot that you have in the field of leaving over some of the grains for poor people to come in and collect. Remember the book of Ruth, Sefer Ruth, you have the story of her going into the field of Boaz and collecting as a poor person. The mitzvah Shemitah fundamentally is a mitzvah also of opening up the field and allowing people to come in, as the Torah says in Parshat Mishpatim, Vashvi'it tishmitena unetashta ve'achlu evyonei amecha. The whole purpose of Shemitah in this regard was to free the ownership of the field and then have people be able to come in and take freely. This also a mitzvah. And in this context, the Rambam then talks about matnot aniyim, general tzedakah. And in this category, the Rambam in the fourth source from the Yolchot Matnot Aniyim part Yud, the first paragraph halacha aleph, the Rambam tells us that tzedakah is the very identification of a Jew as a descendant of Abraham Avinu. Chayavim anu lihizaher b'mitzvah tzedakah yoter b'kol mitzvah tasei. One is to be more careful, scrupulous with the mitzvah of tzedakah, more than any other positive mitzvah. Shatzedakah siman latzadik zera Avraham Avinu. The very, very identification of the Jew can be measured up by the mitzvah of tzedakah. And the Rambam refers to the famous Ma'amar Chazal that's found in Masechet Sanhedrin, Ve'ein Yisrael nigalin ela b'tzedakah, shenema tzion v'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveha b'tzedakah. That ultimately, redemption in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim will come about because of tzedakah. the Rebbe is very, very careful to point out that we are not prophets, and we are not 100% able to interpret current events with great accuracy. However, I think it would be proper to say that our generation today of Am Yisrael, with all its shortcomings, at least in the area of tzedakah, I think this is an area that, while like in any other mitzvah, we can always do better, I think in this particular area, Am Yisrael has nothing to be ashamed of itself. I think that there's so many activities, both here in Eretz Yisrael and abroad, that are tzedakah oriented, that who knows if it wasn't because of the mitzvah of tzedakah on such a national level that we have achieved so much of what we have achieved here in Eretz Yisrael in the last 60 years. Ein Yisrael migalin ela b'tzedakah. We're not there yet. We do not yet have Beit HaMikdash. But nevertheless, we've made tremendous progress in terms of what we do have. And hopefully, this is a result of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being impressed with so much chesed and so much tzedakah that is going on. I say again, there's always room for improvement, but this is specifically an area that one cannot come to Am Yisrael with any degree of complaints. I think Am Yisrael performs royally in this regard. But then comes the most famous section of this Rambam Hilchot Matnut Aniyim. It's from Halacha Zayin until Halacha Yudalet, where he talks about the eight levels or eight degrees of the mitzvah of tzedakah. Now here, the Rambam points out that the highest level of tzedakah is not to give someone a handout, but rather... But rather, the idea of providing for someone who would be able to provide for himself. The Rambam feels that there could be no greater tzedakah than providing employment for an individual, or providing a loan so that that person would be able to get back on his feet. The idea of a loan is far from being an embarrassing situation. We know that many, many very successful businessmen and industrialists go to the bank for loans for all kinds of capital for the next project. And that's a very acceptable thing. That actually shows that you're a very successful individual. So a loan protects a person's dignity. And what the Rambam was really saying was the highest level of tzedakah is when you protect the kvod habriyot, the kvod adam, the dignity of the individual. The less embarrassing the situation is, the higher the degree of tzedakah. And therefore, if somebody is in need, and because he's without a job, so it's true, you may have to solve the problem of the moment that he has nothing, no food on the table. But that's not going to solve his long-range problems. Long-range problem, perhaps you need a job. And certain communities are aware of how to create the jobs of public interest, and you have to network and figure out where this individual might be able to be useful so that he will earn a salary instead of just going door to door and collecting. So the Rambam says that providing employment for an individual and providing loans for individuals, this would be the highest level of tzedakah. Interestingly, several years ago, when Benjamin Netanyahu was the finance minister, and he proposed a revamped program for the treasury, which ultimately was accepted and ultimately proved itself. The economic situation in Israel, thank God, in the last few years has improved substantially, and the unemployment has been going down rather regularly in the last few years. And this has to do with the fact that the government made a decision that instead of just giving outright handouts to people who are not working, they will almost twist their arms that they have to go to work. And what the government will provide, they'll provide with a type of supplementary income. The saying is that if you don't work, you're going to get nothing. If you do work, and you only earn a certain amount, and it's below the poverty line, so the government will supplement that income, but let's just see you go to work, and that's going to be healthier from every point of view, from a social point of view, from a family point of view, And at the end of this press conference, when the Benjamin Netanyahu, then the finance minister, presented the issue, he actually quoted this section of the Rambam for support, and he says Rambam introduces this idea, and this is going to become the backbone of the policy of the state of Israel. And I thought that was a Kiddush Hashem. That even though perhaps Bibi Netanyahu didn't think of it all by himself, perhaps he had good advisors who suggested it, but you know, mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma doesn't make a difference. If he didn't think of it by himself, well, now he knows it, and it made a tremendous impact on the media, because all of a sudden everybody took a second take, and Bibi Netanyahu was using the Rambam to push a particular program at the financial program at the Ministry of Finance. Yeah, Rabbi Kalman, you're on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you're talking on Bibi, as I'm sure you know, and obviously, that one of the major things is he cut the allowances to large families, and the Haredi population, of course, was very upset about that, because they were getting really, thousands of shekels a month. I presume it's part of the same system. In other words, I'm just curious on your comments on that sort of aspect of the thing, and helping like families with like larger children, and an economist will tell you the society, can't do that. The society has to invest its resources in creating jobs, not in supporting, large families, and how that plays in, especially in light of the list of who are who.
Basically what the government made a decision was that the bubble is bursting for those who feel that general society is going to finance thousands of young families of the primary breadwinner sitting in yeshiva and studying Torah for 10, 15, 20 years. That is no longer going to happen. It's no longer happening. And it's not that the government wanted to penalize large families. What the government was interested in was encouraging fellows to go out and work and go to... what happened was the last few years, professional schools were actually launched in the Haredi sector for all kinds of professions, and we are actually in the midst of a very, very, very important transition. In my humble opinion, this is a very extremely important transition of a society, indeed, with large families, where people are now going out to work. The workforce is now being joined by individuals who are yeshiva boys, and now going into computer technology and other related fields, that, as well as going to the army. There are more and more of the Haredi community of the youth who understand that they have a responsibility to the country as well. And I hope that all this becomes more developed, the friction in the country between the secular left and the ultra right may dissipate somewhat. I believe that it's sound policy that, and I believe the Rambam says it very, very clearly, if a person wants to sit and learn and has someone who volunteers to support that individual, that's a tremendous chesed. On that score, the Gemara talks about Yisachar and Zvulun, based on the pasuk, Smach Zvulun B'Tzeitecha, V'Yisachar B'Ohalecha, in Parshat Zot HaBracha. We're going to read it soon in Zot HaBracha. And Chazal say that the Zvulun people were the shippers, were the business people, and the Yisachar people were those who were sitting and learning. The Rambam himself had an older brother who was in international shipping, and he supported the Rambam's activity. With the Rambam received a stipend from him until the disaster struck, and this brother perished on the high seas in the Indian Ocean. And the Rambam did not want to receive a stipend from the community. The Rambam believed, and this is said very, very emphatically in his commentary to Mishnah Perkei Avot, the fourth chapter, that it is outright chil Hashem for a Talmid Chacham to demand of others to support him. The Rambam feels that if somebody is voluntarily supporting a Talmid Chacham, that is to be applauded. But you cannot demand of the community such support. And basically, because of political reasons, because of coalition agreements, there was this kind of demand that was taking place from the 1960s until the 1990s, late 1990s, and now the 2000s, and that's coming to an end. The political scene in Israel has changed very radically, and no longer would the government of Israel agree to that kind of tremendous finances, and which is now causing many of the Haredi community to consider what was always traditionally known as very acceptable, and that's called going to work. Okay, so I'm not at all familiar with this. I'm not at all familiar with this particular suggestion, but if you'd ask me, do I believe it? I can tell you I believe it, because unfortunately there are those who are very nervous about any type of change. Whenever you talk about a change in society, you don't know what it's going to look like when the dust settles. And there are many, many Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, who are very set in the way they conduct their Torah activities and so on. This could be very, very difficult. Now, you don't have to give me a name. All I'm saying is that you do not have any of the recognized Gdolei Yisrael of Agudat Yisrael coming out publicly saying that we think the boy should go to the army today. But nevertheless, it's happening anyway. And many times what happens in Am Yisrael, it's the grassroots that develop the change, and we're seeing it in front of our own eyes, that both in the area of serving the army, there was a unit called Nachal Haredi that began basically with kids who were really on the fringe of the Haredi community, and now it's becoming much more mainstream, and I can tell you that some of them are performing very, very well in the security area. But in the area of employment, it's becoming much more fashionable for people to understand that they have to go to work, and you know, it's already a second generation of Kohler people, and you know, the kids going to yeshiva today, so their fathers are also Kohler people, so they can't support them any longer. Unless there's some type of inheritance from the grandparents, these people are going to be at a loss, and they're not going to be able to turn to the Israeli government any longer for substantial support. I wanted to point out that the and then we'll just open up for more questions if anybody's interested, that the Rambam, as he goes down the ladder, he talks about Matan Beseter, that is, that if a person does not know who is the recipient and the receiver does not know who is the donor, that's a very high level of tzedakah. Lower than that is when the recipient knows the donor or the donor knows the recipient. And lower than that is when the two parties do know each other, so you do have this element of embarrassment, but nevertheless, the donor initiates the help. He knows the person is in need and doesn't sit around and wait until the person in need comes knocking on the door, but you take the initiative and you express empathy that he is in this situation, and you extend the assistance that's necessary. And less than that is, all right, the person knocked on the door, but at least give it with a smile. Make him feel comfortable, offer him a drink of water, and so on. And the last possibility is that you give him the assistance and you slam the door, and you make him feel very bad that he even knocked on the door in the first place. But at least the bottom line is that that he did have the assistance. I remember hearing a talk from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichron Lebracha. He was speaking about the first Mishnah of Masechet Shabbat, that talks about the prohibition of hotza'at, carrying, transferring from the private domain to public domain, Rishuta Yachit, Rishuta Rabin. And the illustration mentioned in the very first Mishnah, Masechet Shabbat, has to do with a poor person outside who needs some bread, who needs some food. And you have this whole discussion, if what happens if the poor person sticks his hand inside the house and takes the bread outside the house, and if the person inside the house sticks it, whichever way it's going, you learn all the halachot of transferring from one domain to the other. The Rebbe asked the question, why did the Mishnah give us a case of tzedakah, of a poor person outside, ketza pashata ani et yado, into the window, into the door of the house? Why the Chazal could have thought of some other case in human existence that would illustrate the scenario of transferring from one domain to the other? The Rebbe said that you may think that here's this poor person standing outside, and he wants food, and you really want to help him, but you know, Shabbos is standing in the way, because he's outside, and I can't give him food, sorry, you know, come back tomorrow. The Rebbe says, the Mishnah is teaching you that when the poor person is standing outside, and you know that the halakha is, you can't stick your hand out and give him the challah and give him the bread, you've got to invite him inside. That's what the message of the Mishnah is. You make sure that that Anid Avyon, that poor person, is not standing outside on Shabbat, but you open the door for him, and you have him join. And that goes back to the first comment that we made about Yom Tov, and indeed our Yom Tov should be Yom Tov of the Samachta B'Chagecha, together with all of Klal Yisrael. If anybody has any questions, I apologize for a little hoarseness, but that's what speaking before Nila and davening Nila is all about just yesterday. The question of tzedakah, of how to measure the 10%, there is a sefer, I don't know exactly the author, but I know we have it in the library here in my shul. It's called Ma'asar Ksafim, and some Talmud Chacham wrote a book about everything you want to know about tzedakah and you're afraid to ask. How do you measure the 10%? Is it before taxes or after taxes? Is it before expenses or after expenses? And what are you allowed to accept as deductions? So it's interesting that the Rambam says, In the bottom of the first page in Halacha Tzedayin, that all of the needs of your own children who are obligated on their own to take care of their needs, which by the way means over bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah, every penny that we give to feed our teenagers who are yet at home and pay for the yeshiva tuition, and the word is that in North America yeshiva tuition is quite a bundle, the Rambam says this is deductible as tzedakah. Deductible at tzedakah. And the Rambam says not only is it deductible at tzedakah, but there can't even be a better tzedakah because it says aniyei ircha kodem. Your primary obligation is to the tzedakah of people who are close to you, people in your city, people in your family. So your children certainly come first. So the tuition monies, I'm just going to throw out a number, and you correct me if I'm out of line, $15,000 a year per child at a yeshiva. I think those are the numbers that I'm hearing today in the United States. So if you have 3, 4, 5 children, that's going to be a bundle.
How much? 17,900 kids in the high school.
Well, you're Canadian dollars.
Canadian dollars more than the American dollar. First time in over 30 years, Canadian dollars is higher than the US dollar.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, this is more. Okay. So this is a fortune of money. If you just take a look at Halakha Tetzayin, the bottom of the first page, Rambam says, Hanotein Mizonot, the Banavel of Nutav HaGedolim, to his, which means they're over Bar Mitzvah and Bat Mitzvah, his sons and daughters, She'eino Chayab B'Mizonotayim. Once they're Bar Mitzvah, the parent is not obligated to provide for them. They should go out and go to work. K'dei Milameid HaZcharim Torah, so that the boys should go and sit and learn Torah. He's going to give them, support them. U'lahnirig HaBanot B'derech HaYishara. Below you, mevuzot, so whatever the activity of the girls, that they should be in a proper environment. And so too, supporting of one's parents, needy parents. The Rambam goes on in the next halacha, Yudzayin, the beginning of the second page, and says, you know, sometimes we have a home assistant, domestic help, of a cleaning woman or whatever other domestic help we have. We should look for outside the Jewish people. We should look for Am Yisrael, people who need help, and they should be very much part of our household. And this is very much in the spirit of tzedakah. So on the question of the 10%, exactly how to look at it, I would assume, first of all, many Paskim say that it comes on top before you take off taxes. That's where you're going to have to start making the calculation of your 10%. Some people say it's after taxes, but here in Eretz Yisrael, it is very much assumed that not all, but part of the monies that are taken off, deducted up front for what's considered the equivalent of Social Security, Bituach Le'umi, which almost all of that money of Bituach Le'umi goes for needs that are halachically and classically described as tzedakah. This is a fair share of monies that get taken off from the top, plus income tax here in Eretz Israel, which some of those monies are also collective tzedakah of sorts. I believe that people who are taxpayers here in Eretz Yisrael are doing very well in terms of 10% and might actually be way over the 20%. So we're all chassidim here in Eretz Yisrael. Ta'amech kulam tzadikim. With regard to people who are collectors, this has become somewhat of a public nuisance. There are communities, I know that in the United States it exists, where there are committees where no one can just come around to collect without receiving some type of a license from some unified board or authority in order to clear the person that the person is on the level. I think there's a great problem of so many people just floating around collecting, and we have this very bad feeling that maybe things are not on the level, unfortunately, and therefore this would be a good idea for all communities somehow to get into. I agree that this is an interruption in the middle of Tefillah. When I was in Zurich, Switzerland, just a few weeks ago, in the morning, there was a 24-year-old individual from Yerushalayim who was collecting, and he had a letter, and I always read the letters. And he very embarrassed me, nodded him almost immediately that he's collecting for himself, which I understood. And I looked at him and I said, you know, you're 24 years old, why don't you go to work? So he looks at me and he said, well, don't you see, I just started working. This is my job. I now come and collect. He's now employed. And it's very, very sad that there are kids who are growing up that they see this as a mode of employment where they don't have to report their income and they don't have to pay taxes. Yet when it comes to receiving benefits, some of them are first online to receive the benefits. This is the elements of Chilul Hashem here as well, and most probably Gezel from the Tzibur, because the less people that pay taxes, the more everyone else will have to pay, and you'll never know who you're taking it from. It becomes a very big problem on Yom Kippur to ask Mechila when you don't even know who you took from. So this is something that's very much a very, very big problem. And unfortunately, we don't hear a collective voice of Rabbanim to take an issue. I think perhaps the RCA, Rabbinical Council of America, perhaps the Reitz alumni, perhaps the Young Israel rabbis at the conventions should give some thought to this phenomenon and maybe come up with a collective policy and a unified policy, which then would, if it works, you know, I'd be happy to spread it in Europe as well, because it is becoming a big problem. The problem is you don't want to close off those individuals who are really sincerely in need, but you want to somehow filter out those who are just doing this because it's a cheap way of making a living. I think if Rabbanim perhaps can do this collectively, this could make a major impact. It's a big problem. Sometimes you can ignore somebody because you're in the middle of Shemana Esrei. There are some poskim who say that if a Jew sticks his hand out, so you have to give something. It doesn't make a difference if it's one penny. You have to give something. And at least you were yaitze, you fulfilled your obligation. It's a very uncomfortable feeling just having a Jew pass by. And the problem is that it's exploited. This particular halacha is exploited. And it's very, very sad. So I do say that hopefully the safeguards can be put into place.
If I may, we'll let you go. It's getting late, but we're just going to talk about the situation in Israel and what's happening here. It's all very nice, but you know, sitting on the sidelines of the food stars, I don't see it. The Gadolim, quote unquote, have reacted even more strongly. They have said, you know, these women, you know, college, like training things, they don't want them going to. Now, often that's a reaction because they're afraid, like you mentioned, what's going to happen. Not to say, the Nachum Friedman for 30 years has been saying that the Haredi community can't continue this way, but they continue to form new generation, and somehow, even though they're rich from poverty, they're managing, and I don't know, I don't see any changes. If anything, I see it getting worse, unfortunately. I agree with everything you said. I think what President Daniel did is great. By cutting all these things, it is like forcing some, but I don't know, it's just really a comment more than a question. I don't really see it happening. I think it's going to be a long time before it happens. And I'm afraid, look at what happened in, what's it called, Zimbabwe. You know, they impoverished a country. The fact that the Haredim are becoming more and more numerous, so people say they're going to have to work. I don't see that's true. I think, I don't really that's an issue. Very often people have such strong health beliefs, even if the country goes into poverty, doesn't become an issue.
You're quite correct, Rabbi Jay. First of all, I want to point out that these newly founded schools for professional training for Haredi, they call it the Haredi College, you have now in Romania and Yerushalayim, they're actually full. The enrollment is absolutely full, which in itself is an indication of the need. Second, you're quite correct with your assessment that people in Bnei Brak is the leading community city in Israel of poverty, and it's a voluntary poverty, which when you ask the people on Rehov Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak, if they think that they are in poverty, they will deny it. Because they believe that they are samech b'chokam, they are living within their means, and they are very, very happy about their situation. They do not feel that they've been cut. But many of them have survived because of a variety of stipends that are coming to an end, and they're feeling the crunch, and something's going to have to be done about it.